So we have two opposing systems. We have the Judeo-Christian system. We have the same God. We have the same Bible. The Messiah is not a Buddha. He's not a Hare Krishna. And he's not a Muhammad. The Messiah is a Jew who speaks Hebrew. Amen? Now, and the Islamic system opposes this. Now, I wanted to share, go back to Surah 5, verse 51. And this is going to help you to begin to understand why Allah is Satan. St. Louis, about 1986, I don't remember specifically the year, there was a 16-year-old Palestinian Muslim girl. She comes home from school, and there's a big fight in the house. She has a boyfriend, a Christian boyfriend. I think he's a Christian and a black also. And they said, you cannot have a Christian boyfriend because of Surah 5, verse 51. And this Palestinian-American girl says, Mom and Dad, guess what? We're in America now. You know, we're not in the old country anymore. Big mistake. The mother and father started to beat her. She took the phone, dialed 911. The mother slapped the phone out of her hand, but made the mistake of not hanging up. And the police heard what went on. The mother held the daughter while the father stabbed her to death. And they were both saying, in the name of Allah, die, daughter, die. And I have to tell you a little story. John Leffler knows that Spanish is my mother tongue. My grandparents were being chased down the pier in Odessa in the Ukraine by the Cossacks who wanted to chop their heads off. And they went up on the boat and they said to the captain, where are we going? He said, Argentina. He said, we don't care, anywhere. Just get us out of here. And so my parents grew up in Argentina. Spanish is my mother tongue. And I was in a church in Beloit. Beloit, Wisconsin. Central Christian Church. And there, I spoke in English. And there was a Mexican Spanish-speaking church in the English-speaking church. You know, they had another building and they had their own services. And I preached 3 hours in Spanish. And the pastor heard my message and said, your books say these things? I said, yes, let's do your books in Spanish. I said, oh, this is my dream. I want to go to visit my family in Argentina, and I want to go to Mexico, and I want to go to Colombia, and I want to go to Peru. And, you know, I can't just come to Coeur d'Alene all the time. And a year goes by, and I never heard from him. And then Betty, who does my booking, says, they need you in Beloit. Go to Beloit. So I drive to Beloit. Yeah, just now I drive around the country, literally. Go to Beloit. And Pastor Sandoval says, somebody you have to meet. And who is this? This is a Puerto Rican Hispanic woman. I go to meet her, and turns out the story is like this. There's this mother who's the grandmother, and she married a Palestinian in Puerto Rico, Palestinian Muslim. And then she had this daughter. So the daughter is half Christian, half Muslim. And then when the daughter is in her teens, the father, who is a Palestinian Muslim, sends her to Bitin, which is a village near Bethel, north of Ramallah. And there she meets her husband-to-be, who's a Palestinian Muslim. They marry. They come back to America with three children. And so now the grandchildren are three-quarters Muslim. Now, according to Islamic law, the children are Muslim. And the pressure, as the children are growing, the pressure increases on the grandmother and the mother to become Muslims. But they're Christian. They're Hispanic. And so, to make a long story short, the grandmother divorced her husband. And the daughter divorced her husband. And now they both have fatwa, which is death sentence. Because anybody, it says in the Quran, any Muslim who abandons Islam is an infidel and is worthy of death even more than the Jew and the Christian. In other words, if you were a Christian and you became unsaved, then that you are to be put to death. This is the way Islam treats the traitors. So we go to her house and we sit speaking in Spanish for 3 hours. And she goes testimony after testimony after testimony. And the pastor says, did you know these things? I said, yeah, they're in my book. Yeah, they're in my book. Then finally, she says, final testimony, I don't want to waste too much time with this. She says, and my best friend, 12, 13 years ago, was the 16-year-old girl in St. Louis who was killed by her parents. And the pastor said, did you know this? I said, yeah, it's in my book. So he said, we've got to get your books out in Spanish. So my books are being translated into Spanish now, praise God. So you see, Surah 5, verse 51 is the basis of the hatred of the Jew and the Christian from the Quran. Now, let's look at the Day of Judgment. There are two teachings that I stress in my two books from the Hadith. Hadith is not the Quran. The Hadith is kind of like the Talmud is to the Bible. The Hadith is to the Quran. It is ex and post Quran, just as the Talmud is ex and post Bible. But it is holy to Muslims just like the Quran itself. And, you know, Jews and Christians have been fighting for 2,000 years about, you know, the first coming or the second coming that we're waiting for. But everybody agrees the Messiah will come and every knee will bend and every tongue will swear loyalty and the believers will go into the millennium of the Messianic era. Jews believe this, Christians believe this. Islam is a little different. Firstly, Islam believes that on the Day of Judgment there will be a final battle and Muslims will kill every last Jew on the face of the earth. Not only in Israel, everywhere. And on that day, there will be some Jews who temporarily evade death, and they will hide behind rocks and trees. And on that day, Allah will give mouths to the rocks and trees, and the rocks and the trees will call out, "Oh, Muslim pursuers, there is a Jew hiding behind me, come and kill him." There is no Muslim in the world who will deny what I just said. This is a cardinal facet of Islamic faith, that on the Day of Judgment, the Jew and the Christian must die. Now, let's talk about Jesus. Is Jesus Christ of Islam? Muslims want to drive a wedge between the Jews and the Christians. So they say, oh, we Muslims are like you Christians. We accept Jesus Christ also. The only problem is you have to beware of counterfeits. Their Jesus Christ is not the same Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ of the Muslims is a Muslim when he comes back a second time. Now, I don't know how many of you heard this, but Yasser Arafat in Bethlehem, the first Christmas, 1994, that he was in the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem, got up and he made a speech. And he said that Jesus Christ was the first Palestinian Muslim revolutionary. How many people heard that? It's in the media. It's public record. Did he make this up? No. This is not his wild imagination. This comes from the Islamic faith. And again, according to the Hadith, Jesus Christ comes back a second time, kills the Antichrist in battle. The Antichrist is a Jew, according to the Islamic faith, goes up to Jerusalem, prays on the Temple Mount with 400,000 Muslim believers, the morning service. Then Jesus the Muslim comes down leading 400,000 Muslim believers. They break all the crosses, and they destroy all the churches of the Christians, and they destroy all the synagogues of the Jews. And on that day of judgment, all the Jews and the Christians, who, by the way, are considered one people in the eyes of Islam, we are the people of the book, we are the Dar al-Kitab, all the Jews and the Christians who have not embraced Allah and His greatest prophet Muhammad will be put to the death, put to the sword by Jesus the Muslim. Does your Jesus Christ put you to the sword if you're not a Muslim? It's not the same Jesus. Beware of counterfeits. Finally, the Quran. Let's look at the Quran. Islam says that the Quran is the divine infallible word of Allah to Muhammad. And it was revealed in one time. It was never changed. It was never amended. It was never touched by human hand. And I'm going to tell you tonight, read chapter 19 in my first book, Fanatic Islam. The whole chapter talks about the fact that the Quran was written by a rabbi. And by the way, if you ask Christians of the Assyrian Orthodox Church, they will say that the Quran was written by an Assyrian Orthodox priest. That's kosher by me too. The bottom line is that it was not written by these early Muslims, because the early Muslims were the best fighters in the world, but they were illiterate. They were nomads. So the Quran could not have been written by a Muslim at this time. Written by a rabbi, according to my understanding. And in Tucson, Arizona, there was a Muslim by the name of Rashad Khalifa, and he was murdered in his mosque because he inadvertently stumbled onto the fact that there were satanic verses in the Quran praising Muhammad over Allah. And he wrote a book about this. He wrote in the Scientific American. This is all in my book. And he was killed on orders from Pakistan by two black Muslim hit teams sent from Colorado Springs and Williamsport, Pennsylvania. So I do private investigation work. You can check it out with the Arizona Daily Star in Tucson. It's in my book. The Quran is a book written by a rabbi or a Christian priest. It is a fabrication. There are numerological codes, just like Grant Jeffrey and Drosnin wrote about the Bible codes and God's signature in the Hebrew Bible. The rabbi who wrote the Quran was such an artist that he put in the numerology of 19, which is a Jewish number, into the Quran, 19 letters, 19 words, 19 verses, 19 chapters. All this is in my book, and we don't have time to talk about it today. One last point I wanted to say is that the Quran was revised and changed many times. And there was a group of scholars from Saarbrücken University in Germany. They went to Yemen, and in Yemen they found a Geniza. Geniza is like in Cairo Geniza. They found a repository of ancient parchments, which seems were deleted from the Quran. 100,000 parchments. They could not take them out of Yemen, but they photocopied them. Anyone who wants to read about this can read about this in the Atlantic Monthly, 1999, January. So the Quran was changed many times. It was edited many times by man for political reasons. The Quran is not a divine book in its origin. It was changed. And when you read the Quran, you will see a book which blesses the Jews and the Christians and then curses the Jews and the Christians. And blesses the Jews and the Christians and curses the Jews and the Christians. I suggest that you take a green highlighter for the blessings, red highlighter for the curses. You're going to see green, red, green, red, green, red. Every verse of the Quran abrogates a previous verse. Because it was written by a rabbi with that specific purpose, to self-destruct. The problem is that Jews and Christians, for 1,400 years, refused to pick up the Quran and read it. I want you to know, one of my favorite movies is the movie Patton, General Patton. Remember when he laid an ambush for Rommel's army? And he said to Rommel, "You wonderful, you know what? I read your book." Jews and Christians don't want to read the Quran. Read the Quran, you'll learn. You'll learn how these people think. It's like if you read Mein Kampf. If people would have only read Mein Kampf, they would have understood Hitler. And maybe there might not have been this Holocaust. Which, by the way, was a Holocaust for the German people, too. Hitler should have been stopped. So what I've tried to do in this first hour, basically, is to give a background, five deceptions and five revelations why they are deceptions, to understand Islam is not a religion of love, it is not a religion of peace, Allah is not God, Jesus is not the same Jesus, and the Quran is not a holy book at all. It is a fabrication written by man. What I'm going to do now in the next half hour, we don't have much time, is to share with you why Islam is a conquering religion, how it's planning to conquer the world. We're going to do this very quickly in maybe about 15 minutes. In the last 15 minutes, we'll talk about Israel. Islam as a religion is a jihad religion. It is a warrior religion because the God is a warrior God. Now, you know, Christians witness. God bless you. If you don't witness, you're not a Christian. When I was in the Prime Minister's office with Bobby Brown, who was Benjamin Netanyahu's advisor in diaspora affairs, he said, "Avi, the work," he listened to me for an hour and a half, what I'm doing in the churches. He said, "What you're doing is very good. Just stay away from the missionaries." I said to him, "You haven't been listening to me for a whole hour and a half then, because the missionaries are the frontline troops of the state of Israel. The Jews gave the word to the world, but it's the Christians who are preaching the word to the world. The Jews are not preaching the word to the world." And kind of broke my heart. And Muslims also witness like Christians do. But, you know, if you witness and a person doesn't listen to you, you're absolved. But Islam doesn't give up on you so quickly. Islam first witnesses to you. If you don't agree to become a Muslim by the witnessing, they say, "Okay, you know what, we'll make a deal with you. We will allow you to remain a Christian or a Jew for a while, but you must be a dhimmi." Dhimmi means you are subjugated. You are subservient to the Islamic cause. We will pay you. We will take care of you. But one day you will be a Muslim. That's the second stage. Now, if you don't agree to that, to be subservient to Islam, then you have the third stage, jihad. Jihad is the holy war or spreading Islam by the sword. Islam, within 100 years, from 622 to 722, had already conquered Spain, Portugal, and France, in addition to from Morocco to India. Unbelievable, the success of Islam. There was no group, no people that had a success like Islam had. In 732, at the Battle of Poitiers in France, Americans never learned any of this stuff. Charles Martel, who was the king of the all of Europe at that time, sent Roland into battle, and Roland defeated the Muslims at the Battle of Poitiers. That started the Reconquista. El Cid Campeador, Charlton Heston, and Sophia Loren completed the rest of the work in Spain. In 1492, Islam, and by the way, Islam and Judaism were banished from Spain, which was, of course, a tragedy for us as Jews. But I'm looking now at history I'm trying to look from an objective perspective. Just as Christopher Columbus was sailing west to the Americas, Turkey was threatening Christian Europe from the east. And you know, it's a very strange thing, American collective memory. I'm not saying this, of course, out of disrespect, but America started with Plymouth Rock, 1620. It's not possible for Americans, unless you're a history buff, to understand 800 years of war with Islam in Spain, or 1,200 years of war between the Orthodox Christians and Islam. The Germans were fighting at the gates of Vienna with the Turks for 200 years. They were parked outside the gates of Vienna for 200 years. So every nation in Europe has had war with Islam. And King Richard the Lionhearted was the king who was defeated by Saladin after 200 years of Christian crusader presence in the Holy Land. So Islam had a rise and fall through Spain. Islam had a rise and fall through the Balkans. And then Islam was in submission. Islam was down, but it was not out. And then all of a sudden, 100 years ago, the tables turned on you. Because somebody created a motor engine, and somebody else created the fuel for the motor engine, the petroleum. And today, Islam is marching. Islam is absolutely convinced that Allah has given them the victory. They have the oil. They have the money from the oil. And the power that comes with that, politically. I would say today that Islam is divided into two. You have the revolutionary Islam, which is Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, the Ayatollahs, the Taliban. Then you have the evolutionary Islam. Evolutionary Islam says, no, we don't want to destroy America. We just want to take it over. We want to de-Christianize it first and then Islamize it second. And what I want to do is take a few minutes to talk about that, and then I'll talk about the revolutionary Islam, because both the evolutionary and the revolutionary Islam agree that the world must be Islamic. It must all be Dar es Salaam. But the revolutionary Muslims hate the evolutionary Muslims and vice versa because they disagree on the tactic. The revolutionary Muslims say, no, America must be destroyed because America is the great Christian Satan in the eyes of Islam. No prisoners. Remember the Day of Judgment? All the Christians die, all the Jews die. That's the revolutionary Islamic viewpoint. The evolutionary Muslims, who I say are 99%, are people, they're good people, they're family people, they work hard, you know, they live in America, 15 million of them. In the last 15 years, all of a sudden you have 15 million Muslims. Where did they come from? They came from the universities. The universities were bribed, received tremendous budgets from Islamic countries, and all of a sudden you have a million Islamic people coming in every year, not as immigrants, they're coming in as students. Then they marry Christian or Jewish women. After 2 years, they have citizenship. Then they bring their families in. You're going to have 40 to 50 million Muslims in this country within 10, 15 years. And the Jews today are not number three after the Catholics and Protestants anymore. Today the Jews are a poor fourth. Because the Jews are 4 or 5 million, the Muslims are 15 million. Just in the last two decades. So, firstly, what we see, by the way, affects both the revolutionary and the evolutionary. We see the return of the Jews to the Holy Land over the last 100 years as a case in which Islam loses the Holy Land. No land which is Islamic can ever revert to the kafir or the infidel. The second revolution in the Islamic world is 79, when the Shah of Iran falls and you have Ayatollah Khomeini. All of a sudden, from an ally, Iran becomes an enemy. And then in 1991, Saddam Hussein, from an ally, becomes an enemy. Don't forget, Saddam Hussein was created by George Bush the father in 1977. And from 1980 to 1988, Saddam Hussein was the ally of the U.S. He was used by the U.S. to fight the Iranians. And until the stupid mistake of Kuwait, he was an ally of the United States. And today, Saddam Hussein is absolutely the most dangerous enemy the United States has. And it's all covered up by the media. You know what, let me emphasize more, since time is short, I want to emphasize more the revolutionary Islam tonight, because we all understand the power of oil and the power of money and the power of the banks, how they control the media, how the tables are turned against Israel. But there, like I said, there was a group called the revolutionaries. And they don't care about money. They will use money to increase the terror and increase the war against the Jew and the Christian. They don't buy into this, well, let's buy them out. You know, there's a movie that just came out now, Pearl Harbor. And a lot of people say, well, it has too much personal stuff in it and romantic, and it's not really a documentary on World War II. But I haven't seen the movie, but I praise it. You know why? Because until Pearl Harbor came out, the Walt Disney movie Pearl Harbor, 90% of American youth had never heard of Pearl Harbor. Now, I want to tell you guys something. you know, I grew up in the 1950s and 60s in America. I was born in 1949. How many people here remember the TV documentary series Victory at Sea? Now, I want you to know something. I think what got me hooked on it was the music of Richard Rodgers. Richard Rodgers, I think, is one of the greatest composers, if not the greatest composer in American history. I grew up with Victory at Sea. I grew up with World War II. And remember Patton, when he was in Carthage in North Africa, and he was telling his aide-de-camp, I know, I was there, you know, at the battle 2,000 years ago. So when I hear about Pearl Harbor, I was there, even though I was born in 49. Why? Because I grew up with this stuff, with Victory at Sea. All of a sudden, during the Vietnam War, it became passé to be patriotic American. All of a sudden, something happened in this country. Everything changed in the 70s. And American kids started growing up not knowing anything about World War II. It wasn't a good thing. It wasn't politically correct to talk about World War II or the Korean War or the Vietnam War or any war, even the Cold War. It wasn't politically correct to be patriotic. 2,604 Americans died in the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. And that started World War II for the United States. Now, I've got to tell you guys something. Saddam Hussein was your ally. And in Desert Storm, remember Timothy McVeigh? We're going to get to him in a few minutes. Timothy McVeigh saw these poor Iraqi soldiers in his gun sights. He was killing them, one after another. 200,000 Iraqi soldiers died. Not one American soldier died, thanks to the technology. But 200,000 Iraqi soldiers died. That's a Holocaust for a country of 16 million. And then the sanctions that the UN imposed, 200,000 to 300,000 more people died. Now, of course, Saddam Hussein brought this upon himself. But who's blamed in Iraq? The Americans. There's something not in the Quran, something in the Bible known as vengeance. The Arabs share that with us. Vengeance. 1993, in February, there was a bombing in New York City. The bombing of the World Trade Center. This was a Saddam Hussein bomb. And yet, this truth is covered up by the agenda, by the media. All the blame was put on Sheikh Omar and 14 other defendants. How many people saw the movie here, Arlington Road? This is the movie you need to see. Arlington Road is a movie about how the media likes to pin the blame on one guy. And they don't like boogeymen. They don't like ideologies. They look for someone, they pin the blame, and that's it. Finished. Forget about it. That's what happened with Sheikh Omar. There was a woman in Washington, D.C., Dr. Lori Milroy, and she researched the evidence of the trial. The phone bills, the money transfers came from Baghdad. Ramzi Youssef, who built the bomb in New York City, he's not an Arab. He's a Baluchi. He's working for Saddam Hussein to break away Baluchistan from Iran. Had the Twin Trade Towers been toppled in New York City, we're not talking about 2,604 people dying like at Pearl Harbor. We're talking about 25,000 to a quarter of a million Americans could have died. It was a miracle that only six people died and 1,000 people. Can you imagine 1,000 people were injured from this bomb? If 250,000 people had died, if those Twin Trade Towers had been toppled, you literally would have had a crash on Wall Street. By the way, that was Saddam's plan. And in February 95, he said he was going to blow up Wall Street. So U.S. law enforcement beefed up around Wall Street. He couldn't get near it. 2 months later, April 19th, 1995, bomb goes off in Oklahoma City. Now, by the way, I've got on the table for free Israel Today magazine, June. My article is there, the June magazine of Israel Today. The truth behind the Oklahoma City bombing. How many people here sincerely believe that McVeigh was alone? You know, President Harry Truman used to say, you can fool some of the people some of the time. You cannot fool all the people all the time. The bomb makings, the ammonium nitrate, were not purchased by McVeigh. They were purchased by three Iraqi Republican Guard soldiers. How do I know? I was there. I was in Tulsa when the bomb went off. My Christian friends told me that they saw this on CBS local affiliate in McPherson, Kansas. The report was shown once, and it was taken off by the FBI. Ton and a quarter of ammonium nitrate. These three Muslim men paid cash, which is something farmers don't do, and they had it packed in 80 to 100-pound reinforced paper bags. which doesn't make sense if you're a farmer. But it does make sense if you're making a bomb. The bomb was ammonium nitrate with a core Semtex plastic dynamite in the middle of it. That's why you had two explosions. I was there. This is in my book on page 265. It's Fanatic Islam, a Global Threat. It's in my book on page 265. I've been talking myself blue for the last 6 years, and everybody says, oh, Avi, he's nice, but it's just another conspiracy theory. Then Janet Davis comes out on Fox News, O'Reilly Factor, March the 20th. How many people saw the interview with Janet Davis? I can't believe it. Listen, you guys go home, open your computers to Fox News, O'Reilly Factor, and look for Janet Davis, J-A-N-A-D-A-V-I-S, or the bombing in Oklahoma City. What does she reveal? She reveals that she was the one who spilled the beans on the FBI, that thousands of documents were mishandled. They weren't mishandled, they were suppressed. The FBI refused to listen. Thousands of documents about what? About making pizza? There was an agenda decision. We don't want to know. And what does she reveal? The two primary things she reveals? That McVeigh was seen dozens of times. This was photographed. I was in Oklahoma City. I saw the photographs in the hands of Charles Key, who was a representative in the Oklahoma House of Representatives. And the agenda destroyed the credibility of this man. He's lucky he's still alive, by the way. I saw the pictures of the Iraqi Republican Guards, 24 sightings of Iraqi Republican Guards with McVeigh. Now, you all know, according to the media, McVeigh confessed that he was alone. I never heard him say that on TV. I would have liked to... Why did they kill him so fast? Hansen is not going to be executed. Hansen should be executed. They're not going to execute him. His wife is still getting a pension. Because they need him. He knows too much. McVeigh also knew too much, but they killed him. McVeigh says he was alone. So, release Terry Nichols. Wait a second. Was he alone or wasn't he alone? It's a lie that he was alone. And it's sloppy because you have Terry Nichols. Who was Terry Nichols? What was his role? Remember Ramzi Youssef, the guy who built the bomb in New York City? The Baluchi, I mentioned him. He escaped after the bombing. He went to the Philippines. He was there for 2 years. He was building bombs to blow up U.S. aircraft, civilian airliners. One plane was flying to Narita Airport in Tokyo. Bomb went off on the plane. One Japanese passenger was sucked out of the plane because of the difference of pressure. Miraculously, the plane remained intact, and it landed safely. This was one of Ramzi Youssef's bombs. How did he catch Ramzi Youssef? He made 12 bombs. One day he was making the 13th bomb, lucky number, and he set off a fire in his kitchen. You know, these chemical fires. You put water on it, doesn't help. And he thought that the other 12 bombs were going to get detonated, the whole place was going to blow up, so he went out to the fire escape. God in heaven has such a sense of humor. By the time the Filipino fire brigade arrived, the fire went out by itself. The only problem was that his computer didn't. So law enforcement knew where to reach him in Pakistan 2 months later. Ramzi Youssef today, praise God, is in the federal penitentiary in Canyon City in Colorado. Now, before the FBI and the CIA got Ramzi Youssef, who did he meet with in Manila? Terry Nichols. Terry Nichols married a Filipino woman by mail order, brought her back to the States, left her in the States, and kept going to the Philippines. Why did he go to the Philippines? He met with the Abu Sayyaf terrorist group. Remember Abu Sayyaf? These are the ones who kidnapped the American tourists in Basilan Island in the Philippines. Because, believe it or not, Islam is fighting in the Philippines. Islam is fighting in Indonesia. Islam is fighting in many places in the Far East. Islam is fighting in Africa. Islam is fighting everywhere in the world. So, Janet Davis, I'm telling you, go home, look it up, because it confirms and corroborates what's in my book. I have to say two more things about Oklahoma City. Lori Milroy, this very special lady in Washington, D.C., yells at me like my wife yells at me. And she says to me, Avi, you're doing a tremendous disservice to the American people by saying that Oklahoma City was an Islamic bomb. It wasn't an Islamic bomb. It was a Saddam Hussein state terrorist bomb, which for me is an Islamic bomb. And I said, well, why don't you go public? She says, I can't. I have a federal gag order. That I work with law enforcement. I can't talk about Oklahoma City. That's what she said to me. So New York City, which she researched, was a Saddam Hussein bomb. Saddam Hussein has declared World War III on you guys. But the American agenda is, if you don't give them credit for it, it didn't happen. Roll over, go back to sleep. Keep working, make your money, spend it. Make your money, spend it. Make your money, spend it. Didn't anyone ever ask why Saddam Hussein's still alive? This guy's a war criminal. He's a Hitler. So Oklahoma City was an Islamic bomb. By the way, one last thing I want to say. I'm driving through Oklahoma. I don't want to mention names. There's a TV talk show host, Christian TV talk show host. I think many of you know who he is. I will tell you after. This is not on the air. And I said to him, let's blow the lid off this can of worms. He said to me, Avi, we're too close. I know a number of people who came forward with the information right after the bombing in Oklahoma City that it was an Islamic Iraqi bomb. They're all dead. There are people who are terrorized even now to talk about the fact that this was not McVeigh alone. There's a cover-up. And you want to know something? I'm interested to know who the murderers are of these people. I want to, well, we all know who gave the orders. And but more important than anything, this is treason. It says in Hosea 4:6, that's why I'm here tonight. It says in Hosea 4:6, my people perish for lack of knowledge. You are not being given the knowledge by your government. This is treason. In Ezekiel 36:6, it says, if the watchman on the tower sees the sword coming, and believe me, the sword of Islam is coming. It's not coming. It's here already. And you're not being told anything. If the watchman on the tower sees the sword coming and does not blow the shofar, does not sound the alarm, and the sword indeed comes, and the people die. They die in their sin, but their blood will be required at the hands of the watchman. I don't want your blood on my hands. And I'm very honored that this place is packed tonight, that so many people came. Because you are all hungering and thirsting to know what's really going on. And what's really going on is not Lorena Bobbitt, Tanya Harding, O.J. Simpson, Elian Gonzalez, Monica Lewinsky. We don't have very much time left. We have about 10 minutes, I think, till the end of the broadcast. If you're interested in what my conspiracy theory is about TW-800, that's on page 266 of my Fanatic Islam book. Just one word I'll say. You all remember JFK and Pierre Salinger, his press secretary. Now, I think he's a serious person. He interviewed the Air France captain of an Air France plane that had to veer off violently to evade the missile that was coming at the Air France plane first. It was in the newspapers. Air France captain evaded a missile, and then the missile just went on to the next heat-emitting source, which is TW-800. So wait a second. Was there a missile, or wasn't there a missile? There might have been a fuel injection explosion. That was a secondary explosion. But the first explosion was not an orange explosion of air aviation fuel. The first explosion was a white, hot, high heat explosion of the chemicals of a Samaras-Strela missile. So figure that out. You know, check that out also. I mean, I'm sure that this cover-up will also eventually be revealed. I want to talk a little bit about Israel because this is really the reason I'm here tonight. We have a parable about a woman who's dating a man for a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, and one day she says, here are the keys to the house, here are the keys to the car, here's the keys to the safe deposit box, here's everything I have, just go get a ring, let's get hitched, let's get married, I'm tired with this shacking up business. And then the guy takes off and splits, because he never intended to marry the woman. If the milk is free, why do you have to buy the cow? You see, if the Jews and the Arabs are to live together on the same piece of land, it's like a marriage. It's like a partnership. Either we live together in peace, partners in the land, or we don't live together in peace, partners in the land. Yasser Arafat is that guy who took off. Ehud Barak made 98.5% capitulation on the demands that Arafat wanted. Even Clinton was flabbergasted because Clinton thought he had a deal. Arafat never intended to make peace with Israel in the first place. Arafat has been fighting with us for 10 months. He sends his children into battle. You know, Golda Meir was once asked, when will there be peace in the Middle East? And Golda Meir said, there'll be peace in the Middle East when Arab mothers will love their children more than they hate the Jews. You know, Faisal Husseini, who died a few weeks ago, used to say, we are the true descendants of the Canaanites. We even predate the Israelites. We have the right to the land. Do you know what one of the reasons that God expelled the Canaanites from the land was? They used to burn their children on the altar of Molech. Child sacrifice. Now it's called the altar of Allah. And there are Arab mothers who say, I'm happy to give all my children to Allah. Burn them on the altar of fire of Molech. This is one of the reasons why God expelled them from the land. The spirit. He sends his children, he sends his women, and then they have they're sniping at us. 400, 500 Palestinians were killed. I'm very, very sorry about the 400, 500. I really am. That's 10 months. 400, 500 were killed. Do you know how many Palestinians King Hussein killed in September of 1970? Black September. King Hussein killed 45,000 Palestinians in 1 month. Nobody said anything. See, it's the Slobodan Milosevic thing. Slobodan Milosevic kills 2,000 KLA rebels, Albanians. He's a war criminal. Ariel Sharon, Barak, kill a few hundred. They're war criminals. But when they kill tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions, the Muslims are not war criminals. I spoke to my wife today on the phone. You know what she says to me? That there was a massive poisoning of the water in the Tel Aviv area, that they shot one of the guards who was guarding, you know, the water reservoir in the Tel Aviv area. They shot him, and then somebody poured ammonia into the water supply of Tel Aviv. Tremendous amount of ammonia. Poisoning the water. You know why? Because the Muslims say that the Jews are poisoning their wells. This is, you know, goes back to the time of the Russians, the European times. The Jews were poisoning the water, and the Jews were using the blood of the children, you know, to make matzah. These are lies that are spread. The Palestinian school system, the Palestinian media, has been teaching that the Jews are spreading AIDS, that the Jews are killing them with chemicals and poisons and uranium bombs. All lies. In order to create a wrath of the Palestinians, that people will be happy to blow themselves up and kill the Jews. These people for 10 years could have been training their kids for peace with Israel. From day one, they were training their children for war with Israel. And I have news for you. The reason I wrote my second book was because the world is with the Islamic side against the Christians. Because of all the millions of Christians are dying, nobody cares. It's because the Muslims control. The Muslims really do control this earth. They control the leaders in every country, including the U.S. And so what happened to Yugoslavia is what's going to happen to Israel. That's why Israel cannot respond. I came in here this evening, a gentleman says to me, oh, did you hear Ariel Sharon rebuffed the conservatives, the right-wingers in the government, who said to start a war? And Ariel Sharon said, we can't. I have a testimony, and this is something you need to think about. And we will conclude with this. It's a little shocking. It's in my book, Christian Revival for Israel Survival, my second book. I left here 3 years ago, drove to Seattle. I was on the West Coast a few weeks. Went into a church and pastor there. Again, I will deposit the information with John Leffler, who this pastor is. He was a sailor in his first life before he became a pastor. And when he was considered for promotion, they asked him, what would you do if you were captain of the ship and you received orders from Washington to nuke Israel? That America would nuke Israel. Not the communists, not the Russians, not the Muslims. That the U.S. would nuke Israel. And the sailor laughed. He said, I'm a Christian. This would go against all of God's promises in the Bible. It would never happen. Secondly, I wouldn't want to be on that ship because God would take out the ship and God would take out the nuclear missile too. They threw him out of the Navy. He's a pastor. And three other guys on the same ship, they're also pastors in the same denomination. And I've spoken in their churches too. And I was in Texas a year ago, in Tyler, Texas, and when I told this testimony, the pastor gets up and says, you know, I was in the Navy, and they considered me also for promotion, and they also asked me that question, and I also gave the same answer, and they threw me out of the Navy, and today I'm a pastor. So they failed the Navy examination, but they passed God's examination. See, the problem today, and this is not limited to Democrats or Republicans, This country has been contaminated for over 100 years by the Mammon people. This country was based on Christianity, and Christianity is based on the Bible and on the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And you cannot be a Christian if you hate the Jews and if you hate Israel. Because this country, America, the greatest country in the world, like Israel, was based on the Bible and on the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But today, if you're a Christian, you are frowned upon because something has changed in this country. So I wrote a book called Christian Revival for Israel's Survival. And when I say Israel's survival, I don't mean the Jews only. Because if you believe in the New Testament, and if you believe in Romans 9-11, and if you believe that you're grafted into the root of Israel, you're Israel too. Your survival depends on your revival. I know we're going to have to take our break very soon, and I will be available after the break for the questions and answers, and probably we will deal a lot more about the realities in Israel and the Middle East. All I can say is we are not playing on a level field, and I personally believe that George W. will not have a problem. You know why? Because Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, and a few other no-goodniks are going to decide America's destiny for us. And George W. will have no choice but to do the right thing. So I don't think God's going to test him. But I do say pray for the president, pray for your administration, because there's going to be a tremendous awakening in this country to the realities that have been ignored and covered up until now. And there will be a great Christian revival in America for the sake of America, for the sake of Israel, and for the sake of the whole world. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Avi. We'd like to do, we can continue on the air here. The network said we could go a little longer. We'll take if anybody has questions, you're welcome to come up to the microphone right now, and we'll do them. I'll kick off the first question. Mm-hmm. Reading the crystal ball of the Middle East right now, it's confusing for Americans because all we're hearing are day-to-day incidents, and Americans don't have a real good idea of what's happening. Can you do a quick capsule of sort of where we are and where we're going?
Okay, what has happened basically is that everybody on both sides has lost any kind of confidence that there's any kind of a chance of a peace agreement. And it's kind of like the Dutch boy with his finger in the dike. Something's going to give very soon. You cannot have a peace when both sides know there's going to be a war and there's no confidence at all between the Arabs and the Jews. So there's going to be a war. The thing is, you know what, excuse me, I don't want to talk about hypocrisy of American and world leaders. But $1 trillion of weapons of mass destruction have been dumped on the Middle East, 90% by the United States military-industrial complex. And basically, now the Americans are coming to the Middle East and saying, okay, boys, don't play with the toys. Now, on the other hand, there's a push-pull here. The other side of it is, there was an article in the Jerusalem Post, April of the year 2000, three months ago, reprinted from Wall Street Journal. It was about a deal with the United Arab Emirates, worth $60 billion, in which a tremendous amount of aircraft and other products were bought from Lockheed Martin, and they were procrastinating in signing the deal. And Lockheed Martin came to Bill Clinton and said, you got to get these guys to close the deal and pay, because otherwise Lockheed Martin goes belly up, chapter 11. And the article said that because there hasn't been a good war in the Middle East in 27 years, almost every military-industrial complex corporation in the world is on the verge of bankruptcy, because what these corporations need is war. They need the shells to be emptied out of the weapons that are becoming obsolete, and because the Arabs have so much money from the oil, they want to get rid of the old weapons and get ready for the next war, say 5-10 years down the line. And as Hafez al-Assad has said, you know, we have lost 6 wars against the Jews, we can lose 7 wars, 8 wars, we can lose 99 wars against the Jews. All we need is the 100th war, and there will be no more Israel. So this is not a question of if there will be a war in the Middle East, but when. It could be tonight. It could be tomorrow. By the way, another thing. My wife, Rachel, I've been doing this work for 8 years. And I want you to know something. I've been predicting war for the last 27 years. And everybody says, Avi, you've always been saying war, 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 and there's no war. And praise God. And I had other testimonies which I could share about how war almost broke out in 1990, 1991, 1996, and how the wars were postponed because God, in his foolishness, is greater than us in our wisdom. And God reshuffled the deck each time. But last week, my wife said to me, don't forget, I'm driving. I'm not flying around the country. I'm driving. And from here back to New York, for example, is a five-day drive. And my wife said to me, get ready to ditch the car and get on a plane. Because that's how bad it is. So anything could happen in the Middle East at any moment, any day now. And you need to know these things.
Right. First question from the floor.
Yes, Avi. I've heard various reports of Muslim influence in the that great shaper of American opinion, our major media, and namely AP and UPI.
AP and UPI are owned by Saudi Arabia.
What is the true story there? How great of influence do they have in what we hear on the evening news?
I don't mean to be facetious. It is in my books. UPI, AP have been bought out by Saudi Mammon, by Saudi investment. I have heard reports that CNN is 40% owned by petrochemical industry and petrochemical Islamic interests. That's why CNN never is good to Israel, so he's bashing Israel. You know, there's a myth out there that the Jews control the media, so why is Israel being bashed all the time? You follow what I'm saying? You cannot run a newspaper without money. You cannot run TV or radio without money, unless you're a Christian, radio and TV, and you're based on donations from Christians. If you are a secular and a financially based operation, all of a sudden, when you attack Islam, your advertising revenue mysteriously dries up. So you can't. Secondly, if you attack Islam too much, you run the risk of being assassinated. You have freedom of speech in America. You know, you can attack God, you can attack the Bible, you can attack Jesus Christ, and Christians will pray for you and love you, witness to you. But if you attack Allah, Muhammad, or Islam, or the Quran, they have hit teams on American soil, they will find you, they will kill you. And like I said before, you know, the work that I'm doing is not exactly a very healthy work in this kingdom terminology.
If we have another war, what efforts will be made by the Islamic War to intimidate the U.S. into staying out or to minimizing the influence?
Okay, again, I don't mean to be facetious. All this is covered in my two books. Islam, in the last 10 years, has done its homework. And you have Iraqi state terrorist hit teams all over the United States. If you remember, Secretary of State Cohen spoke the last week in December of 1997. He held a live press conference on all the American TV stations. I don't know how many of you remember. If you remember, raise your hands when he held up a 5-pound bag of Domino sugar. And he said, this much anthrax could destroy the world, he said. He said, at present, 28 major U.S. cities, it's up to 100 now, 28 major cities in America are targeted for anthrax, botulism, and bubonic plague attack by what he euphemistically called religious and nationalist fanatics. He never said the Islam word once. So Iraq has done its homework. Syria has hit teams on American soil. This is in my book. Iran has state terrorist hit teams on American soil. This is in my book. By the way, very important, very fresh news. This is a scoop for you guys. I was in Grants Pass, Oregon, just a week ago, and in Grants Pass, and a Christian came up to me with something he just pulled off the internet. I don't remember the name of the site. It could have been World Net Daily, you know, Joe Farah, but that there were reports in the Mexican media. There's a newspaper called Universal, Universal, and there was an interview with an Egyptian minister, Mexican minister, Mexican secretary in the Mexican government. And his name is Zercel, Z-E-R-C-E-L, and he was talking about Lebanese and Syrian Hezbollah Islamic terrorist concentrations on the American border in the north of Mexico. And in my travels along the border with Mexico and in churches, Hispanic churches and English-speaking churches, I'm always picking up information about infiltrations across the Mexican border by Muslim terrorists. And, of course, this is something very much mentioned in my book. I could give you an hour of testimony just on Islamic terrorism across the border from Mexico. None of this is being mentioned at all by the American media. As you know, Rassam came in through Seattle. They thought at first that he wanted to blow up the needle in Seattle. His real plan was to blow up LAX airport, Because the bottom line is, if you blow up American aircraft and people stop flying and people panic, within 2 or 3 weeks of this, the American airlines all go bankrupt, tourism goes bankrupt, the hotels go bankrupt. What I'm saying to all of you is, if World War III breaks out, you must continue flying, you must continue investing in Wall Street, you must not allow the victory to go to Islam because you panic. But the problem is, the American people will panic if they are not given the inoculation first and to understand what is about to happen. Americans don't have a clue, because your agenda is traitorous. Your agenda, people in Washington are bought out. They don't want you to know the truth. Your job is to know only one thing: how to make money and how to spend it.
Next from the floor.
Two questions. You can take your choice or miss both of them. Some of my friends who have talked about military writing on policy papers at the Pentagon level have made the comment that you will never understand Islam until you understand the difference between the Shiite and the Sunnis. I'd like to hear your comments on that. And second of all, I'd like some comments maybe on how you see Islam and the United Nations today, and what the effect is there and how they're getting in.
Okay, well, firstly, let me start with your second question, and I'll go back to the first question. How many people here heard about the videotape that the United Nations in Lebanon videotaped the kidnapping of the Israeli soldiers 6 months ago, and they would not only would they not share it, they denied that it existed, and that the UN is there to prevent these things from happening, and the UN videotaped it and is in connivance with the Hezbollah terrorists. Israel is up in arms now, because what is everybody saying? That the UN has to come in and divide between the Israelis and the Palestinians. So what does that mean? That the UN will be subservient to Islam there also? We are sealing our doom. We are sealing our destruction if we allow the UN into Israel. So firstly, the UN is in total connivance with Islam. It always has been. Secondly, regarding Shia and the Sunni Islam, they are both the same in my opinion. You've got, for example, Iran is a Shiite radical country, and they are fighting with the Taliban. The Taliban are radical Sunni Muslims. They hate each other. They fight each other. I say one simple thing. The answer is in Genesis. Ishmael's hand will be against all his brother's hands, and all his brother's hands will be against his hand. The Islamic religion is based on a war god, on a war patriarch, and Islam is there for one thing and one thing only, and that's fighting. After they kill the pagans, they kill the Jews and the Christians. After they kill the Jews and the Christians, Muslims will kill each other.
I have a question. Basically, actually, I have two questions. But I know a lot of America and a lot of people here, they don't want to hear the truth. I mean, all of a sudden you're a conspiracy nut. I know in Israel, which I give them a great deal of credit for, with their problems, they also have where they go into the drills and they get their mask. And I know FEMA has their drills here where they go and they just pretend to clean up the dead bodies. What would you suggest for people to do about the current situation, especially when people don't want to hear the truth?
Okay, firstly, I want to disagree with you about American people not wanting to hear the truth. I, by the way, once CNN slipped up and they did a factoid, which I, you know, factoid is a trivia question. And sometimes the CNN actually does come out with the truth. And the factoid said, what percentage of American youth, high school youth, want prayer in American schools? So I thought 5%, 10%, 15%. 63% of American youth want prayer in schools. That means that means that two-thirds of your young people are Christians, and if you know the Bible, you know, the knowledge of the Bible frees you, liberates you. I don't think two-thirds of these Christian kids want to get this sick placebo that the media is feeding the American people, the scandal, this sick entertainment. If the kids, two-thirds, are Christian, the parents of this country, two-thirds, are Christian. What you have is you have a Bolshevik dictatorship, totalitarian control of the media, and if you're a Christian, and all of a sudden now they're saying the Founding Fathers were godless men. There was a radio show yesterday I heard as I was driving to Boise from James Kennedy's ministry, and there was a guy who wrote a book. I'm sorry, I was driving, I couldn't write down the name of the guy, and the name of the book, I'm going to get the book. And he explains how the media in the last few decades has turned everything around, and that the Founding Fathers were godless men, which is absolutely a lie from Satan. And this guy has thousands and thousands of original documents going back to the Revolutionary War, personal archives and personal volumes of George Washington and other people, things that people wrote, Adams, you know, John Adams. These people were Christians. They were Bible-believing people. This country was founded on Christianity and on the Bible. And anybody who tries to turn that around and turn it into a lie, that these people were godless and that the Constitution means basically godless freedoms, that's wrong. That's not the idea. It was to defend your freedom to be religious any way you felt you should be.
How do we get the word out to people, though? I mean, how do we, as far as with what the media is doing, and what can we do as individuals to get the word out?
Let me say the following. I consider myself extremely honored to be able to be here tonight with John Loeffler. And, of course, I'm very honored that Chuck Missler has given me the permission to I don't want to say to take his place here tonight, but to have this pulpit. And I don't know who's listening to the radio program. I don't know who's here tonight. I just know one thing. I've been working for the last 10 years. I'm not sent by the Israeli government. I'm not sent by the Israeli army. I'm not sent by the Mossad. They don't even like what I'm doing because the Israeli leadership says we're making peace with these Arabs, and here you are talking about holy war. I'm talking about holy war that the Muslims have promised to wipe us out. You know, you call a spade a spade. So I'm all alone. I'm all alone, me and God. That's what it is. I'm not supported by any Christian ministry or any. Well, I mean, I'm supported by you guys that I'm here tonight, but I travel in a van around the country. I speak to groups of 5 people, 10 people, 100 people. But I'm on Zola Levitt, and I'm on 700 Club, and I'm on JR Church, and I'm doing radio shows with hundreds of radio stations. So the message is getting out. I don't know who's listening. I know one thing. You know, a little match can start a very big grass fire. And the grass fire that I want to set is a grass fire of Christian revival for Israel's survival. The first part of the message is the knowledge. I'm not here to preach to you about faith. I'm here just to confirm your faith with the information that is there and is being suppressed and which you are not getting. So all I can say to you, you know, and I'm not asking for donations, but what I am saying, get my books and share them with other people. Get the books, read the books, pray about it. If you feel that this is information that other people need to know, you'd be surprised how many, there are a lot of people here tonight. And if everybody gets the message out to 5, 10 other people, or even, for example, don't get the books, get the video, the audio of the radio show that we're doing now. If people start hearing, people have said to me, I don't say this in a boastful manner, people have heard me speak, and then afterwards it was never the same again when they watched TV or listened to the radio. All of a sudden people said, you know, we see things completely differently now. So my job, and if you're a disciple, your job is to open the eyes of people and get the information out. And like I said before, I think that George W. Bush will not have a problem because the Islamic side will decide. When they start blowing up planes and blowing up buildings and spreading anthrax, botulism, bubonic plague, and when they carry out their plans to the revolutionary Muslims, which will kill evolutionary Muslims too, unfortunately. So the idea is it's better to open your eyes before you get slapped in the face.
That Jerusalem will be an international city run by the UN? Is that where the UN is trying to lead it to?
Do you remember the joke I said at the very beginning this evening? There'll never be a Palestinian state. Jerusalem will never be an international city. It'll be an Israeli city open to all.
Any more questions from the floor?
Do you have any feeling as to why Black America has so embraced the Muslim religion after all the years that the Arabs enslaved them?
Firstly, let me say one thing. I don't want to say ever that the Black people have accepted Islam. I speak in a lot of Black Christian churches. There is one man in Los Angeles by the name of Price, who is a very important pastor who's preaching about the threat of Islam. And I love going to the Black churches. After this service, after this meeting, I'll tell you a few Black jokes I picked up in the Black churches. Good Christian people, loving people, just like anybody else. There is a fringe, and by the way, there is a fringe of white people that have converted to Islam. There is a fringe of Hispanic people that have converted to Islam, because a lot of money is being used to convert people to Islam here in America. But I would say the following. There is indeed an anger, and there is a hate among people who remember their Holocaust of slavery. And indeed, there was a Holocaust of slavery. But the point is, what the Black people do have to understand
is that there was a civil war waged on this land to free them from their slavery, and that the majority of the people of America went against slavery, and praise God, there is no slavery in America today, or in any Judeo-Christian country. The only place in the world where you have slavery is in Islamic lands. And today it has to be very emphasized to the black people. And by the way, pray for Al Sharpton. Al Sharpton went to Sudan, and he came back after having visited the slave auction block markets. And he saw black children being auctioned off for $15 to Libya. The kids were being sold. Women are for sale for $50. In the streets of Khartoum, it's an open market. And Al Sharpton came back. I don't know what he's going to do about it, but Al Sharpton said, this has to stop. So I think that there is an awareness among the black leadership that something has to be done. The problem is that within the black Muslim movement, they assassinate people who go against them within their own ranks. And so you have to pray for black pastors and black leaders that they should not be intimidated and that God will protect them, too, from Islam.
I want to thank you, first of all, for being here. May God bless you.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Okay, firstly, regarding the Shriners and the Masons and the Mormons, these are groups which are deviant in the eyes of the evangelical Christian people, but they will also be targeted and killed by Islam, just as the atheists, apostates, and New Agers will be targeted by Islam. Because when bombs go off, when planes blow up in the air, or buildings get blown up, or they spread anthrax, botulism, bubonic plague, those germs don't ask you what church you go to, or are you a Mormon? And it's not. I've never spoken in a Mormon congregation. If they invite me, I'll go. But because I want them to be warned. There's something called replacement theology, that the Jews have lost it, and now these churches replace Israel. I'd go to those churches, too. I'm not angry with them. They're going to be killed also if the revolutionary Islamic agenda is carried out. And again, the atheist, the apostate, the New Ager. And listen, if George W. Bush says, Avi, come to Washington and tell me what you know, I'll go and I'll share with him. I'll share with any president or with any senator or House of Representatives or any intelligence or law enforcement, American, anyone who will listen, I will explain this to them. Because this terrorism does not know borders and does not know denominations.
Next question.
Yeah. One thing, I think the man you're referring to is David Barton. That writes about the Constitution.
Yes, Barton is the name. Mm-hmm. There's going to be another airing of this show, or the next part of the show, I think in a few days.
He has several books out on.
Yes, so I recommend to all of you. What's his name?
David Barton.
David Barton. He writes about the Christian origins of the Constitution. This is a must read for me, and I imagine it's for a must read for you too.
Would you comment on the fact that they're going to bring Ariel Sharon as on war crime?
Yes.
The tribunal?
Yes. The laws have already been passed that anything Israel does against the Palestinians will be considered a war crime. Using Palestinian labor is a war crime. If we shoot at them, it's a war crime. If we build settlements, it's a war crime. And anybody who's prime minister will be automatically branded as war criminal. I think that's one of the reasons why Ehud Barak resigned. I think it's one of the reasons why Benjamin Netanyahu resigned. Nobody's asking, why are these people disappearing out of Israeli politics? There's a saying, if it's too hot, don't go into the kitchen.
Okay. Next question. We've just got about 3 minutes here for the remaining.
I'll try to answer
broadcast.
Quickly, too.
Yeah. I would just like your opinion on why Israel isn't responding on her own. Why is she sitting on her hands? Is she afraid of retaliation from the United States?
Yes. In other words, what does Arafat want? Arafat wants Israel to kill 5,000, 10,000 Palestinians. Then after Israel kills the Palestinians, the Arabs will have promised to come in the defense of the Palestinians. Israel will have to fight all these Arab armies. Israel will defeat all of them. And then the United States will come in, or NATO will come in, against Israel to reassert power, reassert stability, which is pro-oil, pro-Islamic.
So she's sitting on her hands right now because she has no choice.
We have no choice. Our hands are tied, and it's an unlevel playing field.
Thank you very much.
That's why we need a Christian revival to change that.
Thank you.
We can take other questions as we get off here. One more right now.
Real quickly, I've been in many prayer meetings in my Christian life since I was a teen, and one thing I always struggled with was when they would say, now let's pray for peace in Israel. And I always felt like Scripture contradicted, like there's not going to be peace until Christ comes. Can you comment on how we need to pray for Israel?
Very simple. People ask me, when will there be peace in the Middle East? And I have an answer for you. I want to see a Clint Eastwood-type Christian president who says to the Islamic side, you want to poke out the apple of God's eye, Israel? Feeling lucky? Make my day. One more thing, the converse, is you had a president for 8 years, Bill Clinton, who had a sign over the Oval Office saying, hey, it's the economy, stupid. So the Muslims, when he says, hey, it's the economy, stupid, the Muslims say, we are the economy. That jerk is in our pocket. And he is. He was.
Right, Avi, any closing thoughts? We've got about 45 seconds here.
Let's do the last question if you want.
All right,
yeah.
Yeah, can you comment on the terrorist activities that they're doing over in Sudan?
Well, what's happening is state terrorism. And by the way, in my book, I describe this. They are using biological and chemical weapons to gas the black Christians in the south of Sudan. They crucify black people in the streets of Khartoum, especially the men, and then they take the women and the children away and sell them as slaves. This is state terrorism. It is a Holocaust, and the world is silent. And God will judge all of us for being silent or for speaking out.
All right, Avi, once again, where can people find your book?
1-800-540-0828. 1-800-540-0828. And bicmord.com is the website. BICMORD.com.
And Avi, I really appreciate it. We'll look forward to hearing from you again in the future.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you.
This. For anyone listening tonight who would like to hear other people to hear this program, it'll be posted by noon Pacific time tomorrow on Wednesday. That will be July 11th, and it'll be at khouse.org. That's our main website here at Koinonia House. For anyone listening to the broadcast who'd like to get a year's free subscription to our monthly news journal, The Personal Update, please call us during normal business hours, 9 to 5 Pacific time, 1-800-KHOUSE1, 1-800-KHOUSE, and the number 1. We'd like to thank Chuck Missler and the K-House staff and the staff of the American Christian Network for making this broadcast possible. This has been an exclusive feature of ACN, the American Christian Network.
For a complete listing of materials to further enhance your personal Bible study, or to receive a free one-year subscription to Chuck Missler's monthly Christian Intelligence News Journal, Personal Update, contact Koinonia House at 1-800-KHOUSE1. That's 1-800-KHOUSE1. Or you can write to Koinonia House at P.O. Box D, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, 83816-0347. To fax your correspondence, dial 208-773-6312.